Welcome to this edition of the Sunshine Boys Podcast. I'm Jim Williams, the sports director for SportsTalkFlorida.com. And with me, the Sunshine Boys themselves, none other than Ira Kaufman and Joe Henderson. Boys, you know, there's a game going to be played at high noon. It's going to be on ABC this week from Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, where the University of South Florida Bulls will state their case against a Florida State team that just pretty much got shredded last week. So let's start with South Florida and FSU, boys, and talking a little bit about what you expect come high noon on Saturday.
Hey, Joe, high noon didn't treat the Seminoles very nicely last week. And with all due respect to the Bulls quarterback, he's not Lamar Jackson, who's probably the Heisman Trophy favorite this early in the year. Joe, I noticed the Noles are still 5-6 point favorites on the road against your Bulls. FSU has a habit of coming back strong after losses, albeit this may not be one of Jimbo's greatest teams. But I got a feeling Dalvin Cook's going to make his presence felt, Joe. I think the Noles are going to find a way to win this game.
Well, that seems to be the consensus, and nobody's denying it would be an upset if South Florida wins the football game. But it's not going to be easy. Everybody just assumes, oh, well, Florida State's going to come into Tampa, and they're going to be mad, and they're going to blow away this team. And I'm not going to say it can't happen. As we saw last week at Louisville, anything can happen. But South Florida has the speed to stay with Florida State, and a lot of teams don't. South Florida's receiving core will get open. They will make big plays. And as we saw last week, Florida State is capable of giving up big plays. You are correct about USF's quarterback not quite being in the Heisman class. But on the other hand, he's pretty doggone good. Quentin Flowers is who we're talking about. And he is a dual threat, to say the least. He's at least as dangerous as a runner as he is a passer. And, you know, he's going to make some mistakes, but he's also going to hit you with the big play. So Jimbo Fisher knows what's ahead for his team this week. USF, this is their statement game. This is the one that'll get everybody's attention, and they know that. So I would say that USF will be more than ready to play a football game, and Florida State will be ready, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Jim, it's going to be packed, that stadium, mm-hmm. With the Bucks playing their home opener the very next day. Mm-hmm. I got a question from Mr. Henderson, Jim. You know, he knows better than anybody. Mm-hmm. Joe, how big an FSU presence will there be in the stands at high noon on Saturday?
Oh, I would imagine there will be a significant Florida State presence. You know, they've got a lot of alumni in this area. Throughout Central Florida. And a lot of those folks are probably saying, you know what, this is a lot better than driving 4 or 5 hours up to Tallahassee. Drive out to Ray J, see the Noles, and have a good time. But USF will be well represented, too. It's a big stadium. It's going to be a great atmosphere. This is just, like, really, really cool. I'm glad they're playing it early. I'm one of those guys that thinks college football ought to be played in the sunshine, and we're going to have that. We're going to have two very good teams. Florida State is not – they're not as bad as we saw last week. Maybe Louisville is that good. We don't know yet. But USF has got their program going in the right direction. They want to make a statement, so maybe the Big 12 will look at them for possible expansion. And so this is one of the biggest games in USF's history, and I expect the Bulls to play accordingly.
You know, Derwin James is not going to be playing for FSU, and that could be helpful for Clinton Flowers and the offense. But, guys, do you think, as we talk here on the Sunshine Boys podcast, Jim Williams, Joe Henderson, Ira Kaufman on SportsTalkFlorida.com and BlogTalkRadio.com, are you guys looking at this as a run-and-gun, high-scoring affair, or would it be wise for Taggart and the bunch to play a little bit more of a ball control situation?
Well, South Florida's strength is running the football, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be ball control. You've got Marlon Mack, their all-conference running back, USF's back, is averaging almost 10 yards a carry so far this season. It's 9.6 yards. And Quentin Flowers, he can turn a busted play into a 30-yard gain with his legs. So the ground attack will be a lot of USF's game plan. But you ask if it's going to be a high-scoring game, I think there's going to be scorch marks on the field. The grounds crew is going to have to work overtime to get the stadium ready for the Bucks the next day, because those two teams, this is going to be a track meet. And I kind of feel sorry for the scoreboard operator trying to keep up with all of it, because he's going to be very busy as these teams go up and down the field.
Well, you know, DeAndre Francois didn't look all that sharp against Louisville.
No, he didn't.
He didn't, Jim. But he's got great receivers. They're about seven deep at receiver, as they showed against Ole Miss in the opener. Now, Jim, you make a good point. The Noles are going to be missing one of the best safeties in the country. Jalen Ramsey is gone, maybe the premier corner in the country a year ago. That's quite a dent in a secondary, and Joe's right. Flowers is never going to complete 72% of his passes, but he throws a nice deep ball, Joe, and he's got the guys with the speed to run it down. I think this is a major challenge for FSU's secondary that was scorched in the first half of the Ole Miss game and didn't play particularly well last week. I think Joe's right. I think that there is an enhanced, Jim, there's an enhanced scoreboard at Ray J. I'm not sure they're unveiling the whole thing until Sunday. You might want to keep some of the bells and whistles for the Buck opener, but they poured $100 million into that stadium in the offseason, and I think these two teams are going to give that scoreboard a workout, Jim.
Yeah, they got three spaces up there for a triple score.
Yeah, they might need it. Ira, you talked about FSU's receivers, and South Florida's got a guy named Rodney Adams that you need to keep your eye on. This guy, he's going to make plays, and at some point he's going to run the ball. They love to get the ball in his hands any way they can. They do the reverses. They'll do anything. And what South Florida will do is, if they get behind, which they could, they're not going to freak out, because as we saw last week, it looked like they were just going to be buried up at Syracuse. USF's first road game, and that's always a challenge. They go up there, Syracuse's homecoming. Syracuse jumps up 17-0 in the first quarter. And I'm watching the game here, and I'm going, oh my, what in the world are they doing? And USF scored the next 42 points. So they're not going to panic. They know that they've got the firepower to get back in the game. And maybe the biggest point of all is that they're not – going to be in awe of Florida State. A lot of them played against each other in high school. They've seen each other. USF went up there last year. Admittedly, they weren't as good as they are now, but they went toe-to-toe with FSU for a half until Dalvin Cook went insane in the second half and the Seminoles pulled away. But Jimbo Fisher has made the point that he knows just how good South Florida is, because he tried to recruit a lot of their players. And Willie Taggart's building a real nice program here, and it's going to get better. And that, for them, is why this game Saturday is such a big deal. The eyes of the nation would have been more focused on the game if Florida State hadn't gotten beaten last week. I would imagine if USF wins, for a lot of people, the bigger story would be Florida State losing two in a row. But make no mistake, USF's had this game circled for a long time, and it's going to be fun.
It'll be good to watch. That's for darn sure.
Hey, Jim, listening to Henderson describe Rodney Adams as a dual threat with the ball in his hands, Buck GM Jason Light needs to be at that game tomorrow. The Bucks are home. No reason not to scout that game heavily. And as Joe will support me in this, beyond Mike Evans, the Bucks need another receiver because Vincent Jackson, his days are behind him, Jim. And I think receiver might be the top priority for the Bucks heading into next year's draft.
So, Ira, you think after the game, if he's not too tired, then he can suit up on Sunday and be there in time for the opener? Is that what you're trying to say?
They might need a little help because the Rams have a heck of a defense. But, Jim, that's a subject we'll get into a little bit later.
Right. Yeah, we got a little time for that one. Well, I'll tell you what, as a USF grad, as I like to say, the Harvard of Hillsborough County, I'm looking forward to the game on Saturday. And, I'm happy that Coach Bowden isn't coaching anymore because it'd be tough for me to root against him. But it's not tough for me to root against Jimbo, even though he's also a nice guy. So we'll see. And it'll be a lot of fun. And I think part of this is going to be down to how well the Bulls defense can contain, Devin Cook from FSU.
Yeah, I mean, he really put a hurting on them last year. But there's starting to be a few questions about him this year. He has not been as dominant as he was a year ago. Maybe the expectations are too high. Maybe there's an injury situation there. I don't know. But you have to expect that he's going to come out with his A game. And, you know, stopping Florida State starts with stopping Cook. And if you can stop him and put the game in the young quarterback's hands, you got a pretty good chance to win.
Right.
I think it's going to be close. I think South Florida wins 31-27, and I think that the Bulls will score one touchdown on either a punt or a kickoff return, because I don't think anything will impress me about Florida State's special team. So I think they'll win.
Well,
they'll get one score off of probably a punt return.
Well, they got one last week at Syracuse just that way. So that's a good call.
All right, let's go up I-75, although a long way up I-75, to Knoxville. And we got the Gators against the Tennessee Volunteers, and here on the Sunshine Boys podcast. Last week, we talked in great length about how we couldn't figure out how Tennessee had been ranked ahead of the University of Florida. And now at Neyland Stadium, that ought to be fun to watch this game. Again, a national televised game on CBS come right after the South Florida game against FSU. So it's kind of a nice little doubleheader there.
Yeah, and the big question in my mind going, well, there's a lot of questions going into this game. For the Gators, it's going to be how can Austin Appleby, the transfer quarterback from Purdue, step in and play now that Del Rio is out for this game. But the bigger question to me is, what is up with Tennessee? This was supposed to be a powerhouse football team this year, and they started off very highly ranked, got lucky the first week to beat an Appalachian State team that kind of got exposed last week by Miami. And then they have a nice game against Virginia Tech. Then they go home and struggle against Ohio University from the MAC. So now come the Mighty Gators, And Florida's beaten them, beaten Tennessee 11 straight times. And last year, you would have figured if there was ever a year Tennessee was going to win, it wasn't. It was going to be last year. Florida somehow manages to pull out a 28-27 win. And Tennessee fans have got to be wondering, are we ever going to beat these guys? And I would submit to you that I don't think it's going to happen Saturday. I think Florida wins the football game.
You know, it's funny that Austin Appleby, when he went to Purdue, was heavily recruited by Butch Jones when Butch was at Cincinnati. And so I think he knows a little bit about the guy. And from what I understand, he's got a very good arm, and he's mobile enough. And I think that something Ira brought up last week, and I think it's worth noting, is the University of Florida Gators now, they're defensively, they're number one in the country, and against both the run and the pass. So they are overall phenomenal defense. This might be one of those games where they'll just say, you know, tell Appleby, don't get us in trouble and let us, you know, let us win this game on defense.
You know, Jim, the Vols are favored at home, and I understand, especially considering what the Gators are going with under center and inexperience. But, Joe, I will suggest to you that the best unit on this field, and it's not even going to be close, is the Gator defense. And Florida has won games under McElwain when the offense has sputtered. They have won games. They played LSU very tough on the road, and they've won games when, you know, they haven't scored more than 17 points. The defense could score Saturday in this game. As you mentioned, Tennessee hasn't impressed anybody through 3 weeks. I know I sound a little bit like a homer because I already picked FSU. I'm going with the Gators. They've got a hex on Tennessee. I think it continues, and I think, as Jim suggested, the message to Appleby is don't lose this game for us. It's the old Buck axiom, guys. Give us 17 points. We'll take our chances. I think that's what's going to happen. Gators win this game.
Well, we've been talking about the Gator defense, right? Number one in all these categories. Let's hold off before we anoint them as the new Steel Curtain just yet. Because, yes, they've got some talent. Yes, they play very well. But their first three opponents are UMass, Kentucky, and North Texas. Now, I want to see them play a varsity team in there somewhere. And and they'll get that this week. Tennessee will be ready to play. They're, you know, it's a statement game for Tennessee. Question becomes, what kind of statement are they going to make? And I don't know that I completely agree that they will tell Appleby, just don't lose the game for us. Let's not forget that Tennessee is going to be without Cameron Sutton, who's their very good cornerback. He's out. He's got a broken ankle. He's not going to play. And that could open up some opportunities in the air.
Well, they certainly, I mean, look, the Gators have plenty of weapons. At wide receiver, that's probably the best position they have on the offense. Running game's not bad, but I think it'll be. I think this one's going to be a little closer. I think this is going to be something winner in the 20s on this one. I think is going to be, because I do think defensively Florida will be able to step up and play. And you know what, guys? Since you guys also watch a lot of pro football, I was really interested in getting your take on. You know, what's going on that Gator defense with Brian Cox Jr.? What you thought, where would he play in the NFL, guys? What position would he play?
And it looks like a hybrid, Jim. He looks like one of those guys that you're not sure where he projects on your depth chart, but you want him on the field. Because he's a playmaker. As was his father,
right?
You know, and sometimes Brian Cox was listed at a defensive end. Sometimes he was listed at linebacker.
Right.
You know, you never knew quite where he was coming from, but he was sure around the ball a lot, and looks a little bit like father like son there.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I would even take it a step further and say, hearkening back into the Wayback Machine a little bit, kind of a Charles Haley type, maybe.
Nice. Very nice.
If you remember the great 49ers hybrid player, you never knew where he was going to be, linebacker and whatever. All I know is that they actually should have listed Haley as a quarterback because he always seemed to be back there with the quarterback.
You know, he also, you know, plays a heck of a fullback, so I don't know if that'll factor into it.
There you go.
Into his future. One more college game to look at statewide. The Hurricanes are off this week. Is that UCF is going to play FIU, and UCF hasn't won yet, but they've shown signs of life, and now they have a quarterback controversy in Justin Holzman and Mackenzie Milton. And
UCF has won a game. Let's
I'm sorry.
That. They won the opening week.
I apologize to all the Knights out there. I'm just
and
used to you
not
that, winning.
They ended that streak, right, Joe? They ended that.
That's
streak.
Right.
That's right.
They have to feel at least fairly good about how they played against Maryland last week, lost at home in double overtime. But that's certainly, I would call it a step forward for a team that didn't win a game last year and is 1-2 so far this year. UCF should win this game, I would suspect, fairly handily. FIU's not very good. 0-3. If you want to play the score comparison game, they both played Maryland. And as I mentioned, UCF lost in double overtime, and Maryland blew out FIU by like 25 points or something like that. So I think the Knights do get back into the win column this week.
I think they're going to probably start Milton. He's a true 18-year-old freshman from Hawaii, and they like his athleticism. So we'll see if the Black Knights can come through and win this game, which, as both Iron and Joe said, they should. I agree. They should do that. Guys, go ahead, Iron.
Go ahead, Jim. No. They're looking for the next Blake Bortles, Jim, to build around. I think Joe's right. They're going to even their record at 2-2 after this weekend. And I've got a little faith in Scott Frost, Jim, to get that program going.
We wish him well. So, all right, tell you what, boys, let's step aside, pay a few bills here on the Sunshine Boys podcast on SportsTalkFlorida.com. Welcome back to the Sunshine Boys podcast. I'm Jim Williams, sports director of SportsTalkFlorida.com. And with me, of course, the Sunshine Boys themselves, Ira Kaufman and Joe Henderson. And boys, we talked about the college games before. Now, this time around, it's the NFL Week 3. And that should be some interesting matchups, starting with the Texans and the Patriots playing later this evening.
I think that's this is a fascinating game, Jim. And as usual, Joe, those Vegas odds makers, they never miss a trick. The Patriots are underdogs at Gillette Stadium. Gentlemen, they have lost 5 home games in 7 years. 5. But this doesn't look like a good matchup. And I'm not sure it was a great matchup with Garoppolo under center as well as he's played. Now you got Jacoby Brissett. Joe, you watch the AFC intently. The Texans have a very, very stout defense. They do. J.J. Watt, arguably, in my opinion, the most disruptive defensive player since Lawrence Taylor. He's that good. I know he had back surgery, this and that, but he played like a monster last week against the Chiefs. And here's one more I'll throw in, guys. Jadeveon Clowney the name we've always mentioned for the last 2 years with the word bust is now playing well and healthy. So the Texans are on the road. They are favored going to New England. Hey, the Pats have already proven themselves. I mean, they got Buffalo at home next week. They're probably, even if they lose this game, they'll be 3-1 when Brady comes back. No catastrophe. The Texans, Joe, do just enough on offense with Osweiler and a decent ground game. And DeAndre Hopkins, who's one of the best-kept secrets in the NFL as a receiver. It's astonishing in one sense that the Pats are underdogs at home. But, Joe, the more you look at this game, I think we realize why.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess you would call it astonishing, but we don't know anything about Brissett. I mean, he's Bill Belichick probably doesn't know that much about him. And as you're correctly pointed out, you know, not only do you have to worry about the best defensive lineman in the game and Watt. Now you've got a healthy, disruptive Jadeveon Clowney, and the Texans are only going to get better and better. I think I kind of scratched my head a little bit when they spent all the money in the offseason on Osweiler, but he seems to be doing the job for them. Right now, that consists of not losing the game, and so, but here's the thing. We looked at the Patriots, I did anyway, going to Arizona in week one with Jimmy Garoppolo. Forget it. They got no shot. Well, they win. And just when you think that they're not going to be able to do anything against a pretty tough Miami defense. Remember, Miami went out to Seattle opening week and played well. Garoppolo looked like Y.A. Tittle out there in the first half till he got hurt. So, you know, they will be ready to play. Now, it's a short week. That's a disadvantage to the Patriots. Even though Houston has to travel, I think I can see why they are favored in this game. But are you ever going to count out the New England Patriots, ever?
It would be unwise.
It would be very unwise. It would.
Jim, the man with the hoodie is not hurt. He's not on IR. No. He's still out there, and he's usually the equalizer.
I don't know. You know, he's reminds me of that character in Damn Yankees. You know, just forget about it. You're just not going to beat him.
Does he ever get rattled? It's almost like the football gods are up there going, All right, you cleared that hurdle. How about this one, big fella? And so now he's on his third quarterback.
I don't know. This is how I judge Belichick. May not be fair, may be fair. I don't know. Not even Parcells rattled him. So
no.
What's gonna? I mean, he basically told Bill, "Hey, you know what? I'm not staying at the Jets. I'm going up to New England. Thanks very much for for the opportunity, but not so much." And so, no, I don't look. The one thing about Belichick is he fears nothing. And that's probably the scariest part of any coach who's successful in the fact
Jim,
that they
Jim, one
fear
more,
no
one more point about one more point about Belichick, more subtle, I think, Joe, I think you'll back me up, is, you know, there's a lot of talk about how to use your timeouts and clock management at the end of a half and a game. And, you know, Belichick never seems to get involved in any controversies in that scenario. He's a master. You know, he'll call timeout when he's ahead and you're on the New England 11-yard line. A lot of coaches won't call timeouts when they're on defense and they're ahead. He sizes up the situation and says, you know, hey, I got to give Brady some time if they score here. And a lot of coaches won't do that. They think it sends the wrong message to their defense that we don't have any faith in you. When's the last time Belichick was second-guessed, you know, with clock management? I mean, every part of the game, Jim, of course, with his pedigree and his father, and the Navy background. He's seen it all, Jim. He's mm-hmm. absolutely seen it all. There's no reason to think New England won't be standing, you know, when the playoffs start, and possibly, I believe they're the AFC favorites, Joe, to get to Houston for the Super Bowl.
Well, and they should be. How do you look at that team, especially when Tom Brady comes back, and of course, assuming he stays healthy.
And Gronkowski.
They've done this without the best tight end in the game. Oh yeah,
that's
that.
Right.
I mean, am I out on a limb, Ira and Jim, by saying that this guy's the best coach of all time?
I'm going to go with the modern era, Jim. You go back a long way,
yeah,
too. I don't think I can put him over Lombardi or whatever, but he's the best of his time, Jim. The best of his time.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there were other coaches, you know, who were in different situations who were, it's always tough to say best of all time. But, Joe, I mean, without question, he's certainly the best of the era and has to absolutely be in the conversation of any conversation for the greatest coach of all time.
Well, Ira, you vote for the Hall of Fame. You're in the room when this happens. When Belichick's time comes, if he ever does retire, will the presentation consist of the presenter standing up and going, "Gentlemen, Bill Belichick," and sitting back down? Is that about all you have to say at that point?
So if we have a reasonable presenter who feels that he can save us 20 minutes of discussion, unnecessary discussion, and Jim, this is how it has happened in the room. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Montana sat down. It happened last year. Ladies and gentlemen, Brett Favre. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that with John Lynch, gentlemen, next February. but Joe makes the right point. I mean, forget about Deflategate, forget about Spygate. Belichick's, Belichick didn't need Spygate to get into that room. He's a first ballot. He's a no-brainer. And that's just, and he's proven it again in 2016.
And not to pile on another franchise in a tough situation, but how Cleveland Brown is it that they had this guy? He was their coach, and now we can do better. I'm sorry, Browns fans, I couldn't resist.
Well, if you remember, his defensive coordinator was Nick Saban.
Yeah,
Joe, did he make the playoffs with the Browns 1 year?
I think he did. Yeah,
I believe he did.
Who is it?
I think he made the playoffs 1 year with the Browns.
With the Browns.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was the year that they moved from Cleveland to Baltimore.
That's when he got fired when they moved. They remember they said Modell announced the move and
right in the middle of the season.
And we'll be moving to Baltimore. Bill, you don't need to look for houses. It's okay. You'll be staying here. So, I mean, the Bucks fired Tony Dungy. I mean, stuff happens, but it is particularly egregious considering where the Browns are and who Bill Belichick is.
Funny you bring up the Browns, because this week when they play in Miami, my sources tell me they're making a decision as to whether to start Brian Sipe or Bernie Kosar, because they're down that far in their depth chart.
I think they should bring Frank Ryan out of retirement. I'm just saying.
Why not? Bring them all.
Why not?
Use them all.
You know, speaking of the Dolphins, and I don't know if they're going to take any momentum out of the second half of the New England game. If I'm a Dolphin fan or a Dolphin player, Joe, I'm saying, we didn't show up in the first half. I don't care what the final score was, that they weren't coming back in that game. It was 24-3. And like Joe said, they couldn't stop Garoppolo at all in the first half. And they had a chance to make a statement in that game because they never win in New England. And now they're playing without Brady. And they weren't competitive. So, Jim, you don't even want to think about what's going on in South Florida should the Dolphins lose this game and go to 0-3. I mean, these are the Cleveland Browns, you know, coming to town. I fully expect the Dolphins to win, surely. They're playing the Browns. But Miami's got issues. They got a new coach in Adam Gase, but those questions remain about Tannehill. Joe, the guy looked lights out when he's losing 24-3. New England's not playing the same defense. You know that. I know that. You know, they're letting them get 8 yards at a clip and trying to work the clock. So, you know, I'm not going to be overwhelmed by Tannehill's second half in Foxborough. The fact remains that when the game started, they couldn't move the ball against New England. And those questions keep hanging around Tannehill's neck. And one win against Cleveland, Joe, is they're not going to make them go away.
No, no. This is a game that, well, it's not overstating it to say it is, you have to win the game if you're the Dolphins. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, no whatever. You have to win the football game. And I think, I like Hugh Jackson. I really think maybe Cleveland has their guy. But that, what are they on their 12th quarterback now or something?
Oh,
you know,
not since he's gotten there, but yeah, it seems like that.
You know,
I think RG3 got hurt during the team picture.
I think he did, and McCown can't stay healthy, and he got to wonder if McCown, you know, remember when he was with the Bucks, Ira, that he talked about, well, yeah, I'm 30 whatever years old, but I haven't really played that much, so my body's in pretty good shape.
Right.
For somebody whose body's in pretty good shape, he seems to get hurt a lot.
You know, Joe, you know what the Browns remind me of, and there's other teams too. But you know, Jim, when you take a quarterback in the first round, Tim Couch, Manziel, and you miss on it, you miss badly. That sets you back for like 3 years. I mean, it's hard.
Sure.
The Raiders with Jamarcus Russell, it's hard. The Bucks with Freeman. It's hard to overcome that. It really sets you back as a franchise. And until Cleveland gets that right, Jim, they're going to be irrelevant.
Well, I know that Joe's not too unhappy about that. But, yeah, they're Browns fans. Very unhappy about that. You know, in that conference and trying to stay in the state here, we got the Ravens and the Jaguars. Now, the good news, guys, is that the Ravens offense – and Joe Flacco, he just doesn't seem to be on page with any of his receivers, with the exception of Mike Wallace and occasionally Dennis Pitta. The running game's a bit anemic. The problem for the Jaguars is this, and that is the defense is playing phenomenal with guys like Elvis Duberville and Terrell Suggs back playing. Both guys seem to be in good stead. It's not as deep a defense as it has been in the past, but it's a good defense. And the last thing the Jaguars need is a good defense the way Blake Bortles has been playing lately.
I'll tell you,
Joe,
that was
I love
massive.
Gus Bradley. You know, Joe, I love Gus Bradley. We had him in Tampa on Gruden's staff, nicest guy in the world. But, gentlemen, he's lost 38 of 50 games. 38 of 50. It's amazing that he survived this far. And I dare say, I believe they're going to London next week, guys,
right,
to play the Colts. So, Jim, if they lose to the Ravens and the Colts, they'll be flying across the Atlantic, guys, at 0-4, going into a bye week. And my opinion is we will have seen the last of Gus Bradley.
That's when Joe Philbin got fired last year by the Dolphins. Remember,
absolutely,
they went over
Joseph
to London and got torched and had a bye week coming up, and they said, "Nope, we're moving on."
So, Ira, you think their new head coach will be Sir Alec Ferguson?
By the way, Man U's not doing particularly well, Jimmy. The last couple
no,
of
that's
weeks,
true. But see, at least Sir Alec isn't there anymore, so see, he's out of a job. They're going to London. I mean, what the heck? He certainly couldn't do any worse.
Joe Bortles got to get it together. He's not looking good. Not looking good.
That was a major step back last week for them at San Diego. I thought they would go out and play well. They did not. And I don't think we're going to confuse San Diego with being a powerhouse, especially their injury situations. And I think your assessment of Gus Bradley is correct. The Jaguars have a good team owner. There was a lot of owners would have made a coaching change a long time ago. This guy seems
That's
to be
right.
patient
right.
with what they're trying to build there. But this was a year that they thought, you know what, we're ready to step forward and be a lot more competitive. And it's not looking that way so far.
Well, we got the Rams and the Buccaneers coming up. Home opener for the Bucs. They're 1-1. And Jeff Fisher brings the Los Angeles Rams into town. It's been a long time since that's been said. So,
you know, Joe, this matchup reminds us once again, we can never forget this, of how this is a once-a-week league. And that, by that I mean, Joe, the Bucs open up in Atlanta with a road victory. Everybody's feeling great. And now, because they're 1-1, with games against Denver and Carolina on the horizon, that this has the feel of a must win to avoid a 1-4 start.
It is a must win. There's no question about it.
Before the schedule softens. And, Joe, I maintain the Bucs are a better team. I thought they were better than Atlanta. I think they got better talent than the Rams. A huge edge at quarterback, theoretically, on paper. You can't lose this game. You can't.
No, you absolutely can't. And but Doug Martin's out, so now your running game is crippled. As you alluded earlier, and I agree with you, problems at receiver. You know you got Mike Evans, but beyond that, you don't have a lot of playmakers. Offense is Dirk Cutter's forte. Looked pretty good the first week, looked awful last week. And it wasn't that they lost at Arizona. I don't think a lot of people really thought they would win that game, but it was the way they lost. They just weren't competitive. And from the opening whistle till the end, just basically blown out of the stadium. So, you know, a team with a better image, if you will, we would look at that and say, well, that's just a bad week. Forget about it and move on. But it did send the fire alarm sounding here in Tampa because we've seen it before. And so absolutely right. When you look at what that schedule's coming up with Carolina and, you've got to win this football game. You have to win. You have to win, period.
Well, the Rams secondary doesn't look that ominous. Is that going to help Jameis and the gang? I mean, if the Rams aren't as difficult as either Atlanta or the Cardinals in their secondary, will that help? I know, Ira, you said earlier that part of the problem against the Cardinals last week was the problem that Jameis had in throwing his ball a little over as opposed to throwing it, his ball tended to go high when he overthrew, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, Jim, any deficiencies in the Rams secondary, and I agree, it's mediocre, but that can easily be masked by a pass rush, and the Rams have a very good one, Joe. They have an offensive end named Robert Quinn. He's kind of taken 2 years off from injuries, but he had 19 sacks in 2013. And now they have a defensive tackle in Aaron Donald, who's drawing comparisons to Warren Sapp. He might be better than Gerald McCoy, Joe, and Geno Atkins. He might be the best in the game at his position.
Well,
he's a monster. The Bucs, Joe, the Bucs have to avoid these third and eight situations against this particular Rams team?
Well, let's give the Rams their due in one sense. They held Seattle to 3 points last week. They only scored 9. Must have been a thriller of a football game. But held Seattle to 3 points. And so I look at the Rams offense, and I think they will have trouble scoring on the Bucks. So I think if Jameis Winston can figure out a way to put 17 points on the board, if they can do that, I think the Bucks will win the football game.
So the Bucks, anything over 17 gets them win.
I think so.
Well, like Joe said, Jim, don't give the Rams short fields with turnovers. Don't do that. I don't think the Rams are good enough to march 80 yards.
No.
Having said that, the Buck defense hasn't played great this season. But the Rams have a pop gun offense. They've got Gurley and not a lot of weapons beside that. Tavon Austin is their best receiver. He's never going to be confused with Larry Fitzgerald, Joe, and Julio Jones,
who
the Bucks just faced in the first 2 weeks. So, Jim, don't make it easy for the Rams offense. Don't turn it over. Don't give them a defensive score. Don't give them the ball at the Buck 40. Make Case Keenum earn it, and I think that's the Bucks formula for victory.
Well, I think that it'd be a lot of fun for Buck Nation if they walked out of Ray J on late Sunday afternoon with coming home 2-1. That wouldn't be a bad situation at all.
Let's see if they can put some highlights on that fancy new video board there.
Yeah, exactly.
They need some highlights.
There you go.
No sense in not using it, right?
Right.
So, you know, looking at the schedule, Joe, I got to tell you, I think possibly the game of the day is the Broncos and the Bengals.
Well, it's a good one. And it's one of the Bengals, their home opener. They open the first 2 weeks on the road. They've got to win. They have to win. But here's the problem. Again, they're very good tight end. Tyler Eifert is still out. They're still trying to cope in the receiving core with the loss of Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu from last year, who were great compliments to A.J. Green. And running game hasn't been what it needs to be. So been a very ordinary offense the first couple of weeks. Wasn't surprised that they lost at Pittsburgh. Had a chance maybe to get the game into overtime at the end. Controversial call on a fumble that really didn't look like a fumble to me. Looked like Tyler Boyd's knee was down and the play should have been dead. But be that as it may, if the Bengals can win this game, that sets them up pretty well. And it's a bigger, much bigger game for the Bengals, I think, than it is for the Broncos.
You know, Jim, I look at the Broncos. Let's see if Joe agrees. Heck of a defense and just enough offense. And I'll tell you another team that could fall into that category that is absolutely getting ravaged by injuries, I think more than any team in this league so far, and that's the Vikings, who play Carolina this week. Minnesota has lost its quarterback. They've lost a running back that was MVP of the league. And now they've lost their left tackle, Matt Khalil. He's gone. But the Vikings do just enough on offense. And to me, the Vikings and the Broncos, I think the Broncos are better. And Joe, I have a word of advice for Mr. Marvin Lewis on Sunday. Please find a couple of people that can keep an eye on Von Miller. Because, Jim, that's how the Broncos win. Von Miller makes a play, a sack strip, turns the game around, creates all kinds of momentum, and that's, and they got a very good secondary, Joe. Aqib Talib's a knucklehead, Jim. We've had him here in Tampa, but the guy, I think, has returned 9 picks for touchdowns already in his career. He's got a knack for that. Chris Harris, very good corner. They got a heck of a secondary, Joe, and it's going to be a great battle with A.J. Green on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game. And the Bengals are going to struggle to score points against this team. But there is a little air of desperation for them coming home. You need to make a statement in your game. And plus, this is, you know, it's not really too early to think about this. It's a possible jostling for a playoff position down the road.
Sure.
One thing the Bengals got to do better, I think, is they're not running the ball particularly well, Joe.
No, they're not at all. And that's a problem because you've got to take some heat off Andy Dalton as those receivers work their way into form. And you've got to be able to run the ball, and they have not been able to do that. And I'm not convinced they can do it this week either.
Hey, by the way, guys, the last time the Los Angeles Rams came to Tampa was in December of 1994, and the Buccaneers won that game 20-14. So that's the last time a Los Angeles Rams team showed up, and it was at the Sombrero, and the Bucs won that game 24-14.
And Henderson was probably there, Jim.
I'm sure I was.
Hello.
Yeah, Joe. Hang on. Yeah. I apologize, guys. We had a little technical difficulty there.
Okay.
Long story short, I thought that was the last time I remember the Rams being there was 9-0, and it was a championship game. So
I was there for that one too.
Yeah, that was that was the game that Youngblood played on a broken leg.
That's right, and. Joe, with all due respect to Doug Williams, he was bad that day, really bad.
Well, he was hurt that day, too. He was hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
McKay actually gave me one of my favorite all-time quotes after the game. We were getting ready to set up for his show, and he looks over, and I said, well, tough time, because we couldn't score against tall grass.
And, you know, the Rams had a good team, Joe. They gave Pittsburgh a pretty good battle in the Super Bowl. They really did.
Well, and what a lot of people don't remember is that Leroy Selman would not have been able to play in that Super Bowl if the Bucs had made it against the Steel Curtain. And so he had gotten hurt in that game. So, anyway.
Just the thought of losing to Vince Ferragamo drove me nuts. Anyway, guys. Where can we find you on social media, Ira?
You can always find me on Twitter, James, at iKaufman76. And look forward to our next podcast because, Jim, the Bucks are either going to be 2-1 and erasing the debacle at Arizona, or they're going to be 1-2 and testing the patience of their fans.
Joseph, how about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter at the initial J Henderson Tampa.
You can find me at NTFLA_politics. I'm Jim Williams, the host of the Sunshine Boys with Ira Kaufman and Joe Henderson. You're listening to us on SportsTalkFlorida.com and Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, we hope that you have a wonderful weekend. And enjoy both the college and the pro games.